Heisman Trophy winning quarterback Kyler Murray of Oklahoma declared yesterday that he is ready for the NFL draft via a statement on Twitter. It's 4 days before he was scheduled to report to the Oakland A's for spring training. He chose an agent, Eric Burkhart, Johnny Manziel's former agent. He'll have to return $1.29 million of his $1.5 million signing bonus, which is pretty dope. That's like $200,000 he gets to keep. And the A's will retain his rights. As a player, say the NFL doesn't work out for him, but the A's will not get a compensatory pick. Suck on that, Oakland Augusters.
Oh, that's right. We haven't really thanked Kyler Murray for...
Why did I miss this angle
the entire time? The A's wasted a first-round pick.
Moneyball.
And this is almost worth... For them, it's almost even dumber than drafting Mark Appel. Because, at least the Mark Appel...
They got a pick.
At least the Mark Appel was, widely regarded as a first-round pick. This was drafting a guy who was widely regarded as a first-round pick in Kyler Murray, but that he didn't know for sure was going to play baseball. I feel like this was a much worse pick than Mark Appel.
Well, if I'm going to compare it to Brady Aiken, who the Astros ended up not signing, they got the pick the next year, who turned into Alex Bregman. In this case, the A's will not even get a first-round pick.
Impossible. And they're out $200,000, which we know is 80% of the GDP of Oakland's salary.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
The A's have very little money to spend.
They really could have used that money to fight the rats that have taken over the Coliseum.
Billy Bean.
I think Kyler...
you evil genius.
I think Kyler made the right decision. I'm surprised it came this early, though. Probably I shouldn't be, just because the combine is at the end of this month. So he had to make it at some point here in these few weeks. I guess based on the weirdness of the Dan Patrick and Rich Eisen interviews about 10, 11 days ago, it didn't seem like he was ready to make this kind of decision.
I've done a 180 on Kyler Murray in a lot of respects. The football side of things we can get into later. But in terms of whether he made the right decision or not, I think he made the right decision only because... It's a personal thing. I have no idea exactly what's going on in his head. If he liked baseball more, I would have said go with baseball. If he liked football more, go with football. But I think it's increasingly clear that he was just waiting for confirmation that he would be a first-round pick if he just flat out said, yeah, I'm all about football. And now, man, if NFL teams were waiting for evidence that he really cared about football, he's given back that $1.5 million in cash plus the $4.5 million contract that was guaranteed. He's just giving it all back because he's putting his lot in with football.
If he really cared about football, he'd give back that $200,000, though.
Would he cut off a pinky?
We'll find out, I suppose. Yeah. The Houston Rockets played a basketball match last night at the Toyota Center against Luka Doncic and the Dallas Mavericks and old man Dirk Nowitzki. They took him down 120-104. Gerald Green, the star of this one, coming off the bench, hitting 5 of 8 threes. He had 19 points. James Harden struggled in this one, dealing with a shoulder injury, but he was able to keep his 30-point streak alive. It's now at 30 games after an 11-point flurry at the very end gave James Harden 31 points on the game. Harden, after the game, said his shoulder was really bothering him.
I was getting treatment after the game, last game, and then all day yesterday, today, just an icing and doing the proper work I need to do to be able to go out there and play.
So there are some who looked at the very end of this game, James Harden extending that 30-point streak, and took issue with it for whatever reason.
Right. That's all he cares about. No. If you watch the basketball match, as Paul likes to call them, Harden, between his shoulder and doing what he needed to do for the team down the stretch, did what he had to do. He deferred to his teammates to get that game in hand. It wasn't until there was 2.5 minutes left. He hit that three, and basically the crowd let him know, please, please, go for the 30 points. And this was such sweet victory in terms of watching everybody from Dallas on social media say, well, at least, at least Harden's not going to extend his 30-point streak here. And then they couldn't even have that.
Nope.
They've got their new Eastern European toy, and they can't even beat the Rockets or keep Harden from getting to his 30-point streak. And also in a game in which Harden played selflessly down the stretch to secure the victory before he went for his 30 points.
I wasn't bothered by what Harden did down the stretch because ultimately on any basketball possession, unless you want to run out the shot clock and get a violation, someone's got to take the shots. And we have seen this team against, the Magic, against Brooklyn 3 weeks ago, blow these ridiculous leads late in games. I don't care what the math says. You want to make sure they're taking shots and hitting shots, and he got the job done late.
It was annoyingly close at the very end. I think it was a 9-point game with 3.5 minutes to play. And this is one of those games where you look at Dallas isn't good, and Dallas is definitely in rebuild mode, and until they get Kristaps Porzingis, they're really not going to be a factor at all. But yeah, I have no issue with Harden finishing the game out the way that he did. Though at the same time, if he's dealing with a shoulder injury, I would like him to rest said shoulder. The good news is that the All-Star break is this weekend.
Doncic is the...
Is it Doncic or John Doncic?
I always just kind of muff it.
Doncic.
I'm like Doncic. Okay,
Doncic. Doncic.
You know, the problem is with a lot of these Eastern European names for me is that I use my Apple narrator to tell me the names, and they always botch them. And it's frustrating because it gets ingrained into my brain.
Luka Doncic.
But he is the latest among athletes that I'm angry that I like. I'm like, I want to hate this guy, but I really like him. And it bothers me that he plays for the Mavs.
Yeah, I had a hard time hating Dirk, too. And
I hated Dirk. I like him now. I despised him. It was that wince. When he flopped with his little mini Dirk flops where he's jabbing that gigantic cranium in his back, and then he has that scowl. It's not the wince, it's a scowl when he would look at the ref like, oh, help me. I'm a poor, helpless, defenseless Eastern European.
You, sir, are a xenophobe.
Not even Eastern European.
You just don't like flopping Europeans.
I'll call him Eastern Bloc. But he was from West Germany, right?
Yeah.
So he wasn't, I mean, it's all one big Germany now. But where was, anyway.
It's all the same.
Used to be
Europe.
Used to be a big deal.
They were all fighting us in World War II, weren't they? The French were fighting us. The British were fighting us too, damn it. Oh, all right. So this is the big news of the day, in my opinion. The Cleveland Browns signed running back Kareem Hunt, formerly of the Kansas City Chiefs, but of course released after an incident at a hotel in Cleveland, Ohio from February of last year was made public. The Chiefs actually released him outright. The Browns signed Hunt to a deal worth more than $1 million without factoring in the suspension. The NFL hasn't completed their investigation yet, so who knows how long he will be suspended. He signed a one-year deal and will be a restricted free agent when said deal expires. Browns general manager John Dorsey said that he's appalled by what Kareem Hunt did, but he's willing to help him.
I think we're all appalled by it. It is an egregious act. We all understand that. But after doing our research, extensive research, analyzing the situation, we came to the conclusion that, you know what, I'm willing to help a man on a second chance moving forward to be a better person. And that's all you can ask for in society, and that's all I'm trying to do.
This is the problem. I'm not buying John Dorsey's explanation. There are other people, other organizations that if they did it, I would believe them. And I think that it's important in any industry for people. All right. This got heated the last time we talked about it. I've said I'm not going to get heated about it this time. I've changed my course.
Unbearable!
Because I've actually, yes, exactly. I've actually read a little bit about it now, and it's very easy to take the moral stand of like, no man shall ever have another chance at life after doing something this horrendous. The thing is that like domestic violence experts will say that zero tolerance doesn't necessarily do much to solve the problem, that you need intervention, you need counseling, you need all these things to help people get back on their feet, because that helps financially, that helps women report it if they know that like their husband or whatever, like all these things are true. But the Browns and John Dorsey are not the place for that to happen. That's the problem. In the NFL, the team that's first willing to take on the problem is never the team that's actually the best place for him, whether it's the Dallas Cowboys or the Cleveland Browns with John Dorsey.
Looking at this from the outside, it seems to me that the Browns, in making this move, have taken advantage, or at least they definitely think they're taking advantage of what their popularity is right now in Cleveland, in that coming off what was a very strong finish to the 2018 season, so many people will be picking the Browns to make the playoffs. There's a desperation in Cleveland to make the postseason. The team is already really popular to begin with, and I think they're trying to cash in on that popularity. Kind of like, I think one of the things with the Astros with trading for Roberto Osuna in late July was, we're right now the most popular team in town. People love the players on this team. We think Osuna can help us. We're going to take this chance, and we're going to if a president wins an election by a ton, we're going to cash in on some of that popularity to make these moves.
You know what's Canadian legal system.
So given what I was talking about with like actually intervening and helping a guy actually get better, like everybody says the right things at the press conference, I would say I don't know if the Astros are the right place. As awesome as the Astros clubhouse is and awesome as most of the guys are, I don't know if the Astros are actually the right place for a guy to get that intervention. I mean, You remember John Singleton was back playing baseball and like wasn't getting counseling at all after he had multiple issues with substance abuse. Remember he had that interview where he said, "Oh, I'm just kind of on my own. It's kind of hard." And like a year later, he's gone. So I don't know what the Astros, what their philosophy is about intervening and actually helping people along. I know I don't trust John Dorsey with it. If I can't trust the Astros, you think I trust John Dorsey? Hell no.
John Dorsey, I have a tough time buying into his bleep. His answer right there. This is the same guy who had drafted Kareem Hunt. This is the same guy who drafted Tyreek Hill, the guy who assaulted his then pregnant girlfriend. I don't think that he really cares about helping Kareem Hunt. He knows that Kareem Hunt can help him out.
Coming up at the top of the hour, Mike Sethenpaul, we're going to take a closer look at the elite talent on the Texans and how it should affect Brian Gaines' thinking in the offseason. One of those guys is J.J. Watt, obviously, who was on the Pardon My Take podcast. And I think this could be an interesting conversation. It will be an interesting conversation. Here was an exchange they had on Pardon My Take about J.J. Watt, his brand, and being more real in the last year or so.
There may be of times it was over the top with the, oh, hey, J.J., all that stuff. But yeah, I also think that there is something to, I mean, there are, sometimes people have to call you on your It's fair. And I think that if you're not able to sit there and look at yourself and really kind of take inventory of what you've been doing and what you might need to change and things like that. So I do think I'm a different person from that back then. I don't know if it was all because of that, but I do think that it played a part in it for sure. But I'm always trying to grow. I mean, I guarantee I make more mistakes going forward.
So in this little exchange, Barstool was – I think
they're trying to claim victory they're trying to be cool, but they're also kind of trying to be like, hey, JJ, we're the guys. Remember,
JJ,
remember you got annoyed with that because JJ would do something on social media. And this is the important point. Hundreds and thousands of Barstool readers and listeners would respond with, hey, JJ, let's remember that there's kids starving in Africa. Most of it was pretty funny. I'd say 5% of them were hilarious. 95% of them were anywhere from like monotonous, dull, repetitive, and or hostile towards JJ Watt. So it got to the point where JJ couldn't do anything on social media without like a litany of, hey, JJ stuff.
And I guess my issue with the way that you're somewhat framing it, Seth, I don't know that there was a lot of malice. I think there was a lot of mediocre, if you will. I thought for the most part, it was all done in good fun. Did it get especially annoying if you're J.J. Watt? I imagine it was the absolute worst thing after a while. And I think that the Barstool guys, Pardon My Take specifically, the podcast that had J.J. Watt on now for a second time, I think that they realized after a while, okay, this has played out, and they tried to nip it in the butt as best as they could. And I think that...
after they interviewed him.
Right, but they also raised... I mean, remember, they raised $69,000 J.J. Watt's charity to interview
him. So I'm listening to this interview, and there's that whole time where, like, honestly, the Barstool guys are a little too eager to be J.J.'s buddy and characterize the relationship as such. And I'm like, all right, J.J.'s doing, like, the smart thing to do, which is kind of what guys used to do back in the Howard Stern days when Howard Stern would just attack people. They'd go on the Howard Stern show, and all of a sudden, it's... Howard Stern backs off and they've got a good relationship and you're not getting attacked by Howard Stern followers in the streets. There's a little bit of that, like you're getting attacked in the cyber streets when Barstool has it in for you or is like criticizing you or anything.
You're right, Seth, in that there is a bit of a mob mentality when it comes to some of the things that Barstool does. The legion of supporters is really a legion. They will come after people. But I never felt like with J.J. Watt, it was particularly malicious. I think that there's always been, and I know that you in the past have felt, and I in the past have felt, that some of the stuff that J.J. Watt put out on social media was a tad insufferable.
Oh, yeah, it was young and cheesy.
Right.
Like, and that's where I would say, like, as Barstool's clamoring to get credit for changing him, like, J.J. was young, and he was also, like, he had a certain plan for what he wanted to do. And, some of it was cheesy. I think a lot of it would have gone away with simple maturity.
I do think some of what Barstool in the Pardon My Take interview was saying was a bit tongue-in-cheek. I don't think that they were 100% taking full credit for it. And I also want to make clear, to act as if Barstool was the only one, when websites like Deadspin had articles about how, quote, like headline, 2014, J.J. Watt is a lying clown fraud. This, for whatever reason, has been a theme on the internet for a long period of time. And for us locally, who see some of the stuff that J.J. Watt does giving back, that has been the sort of weird tightrope where you love everything that J.J. Watt has given back to the city, but at the same time, you can also say, he's cheesy a bleep.
It seems to me that Barstool was the only organization that really directly confronted J.J. Watt on the well, cheesiness
and this is
and
my,
the Captain America
that's
stuff.
My issue with it, because like J.J. in the interview talks about how there's times now where whenever he posts anything on Instagram or anything, he's like, can I do that? Nah, probably not, because I'll get crushed for it. Where, like, a lot of that cheesiness, as cheesy as it was, it did feed into a persona that was able to raise $40 million for charity. Like, as much as you might hate it, it actually was part of a brand that really works, and it sells a lot of training sneakers, and it does all that. And I'm glad that he's matured, partly because of just the hardships he's gone through in his career in the last couple years before this last season.
I just don't like characterizing it as confronting directly.
Well, no. And this is where I'm going with this, is that I think there's a tendency to think, because you and I had like kind of a contentious text over this last night, and you kept saying, well, it's true, though. People did believe that he was acting that way. So what part of thinking something means, okay, I'm gonna confront that person on Twitter about it. Like, I'm going to at them.
But to say, oh, hey, JJ, doing something annoying, I don't understand how that's confronting him, where when you have a headline like Deadspin says, JJ Watt is a lying clown fraud, JJ Watt is full of bleep,
honestly,
that to me is actually confrontational.
Well, honestly, though, because this is the difference, you can actually choose to avoid, like, you can avoid articles written about you, and you don't have to see all that criticism.
You can avoid your mentions, too.
Not as easily. Not especially, okay, when you've got over 1 million followers on a social media platform, tell me how easy you think it is to avoid, like, to have everybody muted or anything when they're trying to mess with you. So they, like, anytime you put anything on there, you're going to get attacked. That's all I'm saying. And I'm not saying, like, it's the worst thing in the world or it's evil. I'm just saying, like, everybody, it's shocking and alarming to me sometimes the way people now all of a sudden really feel like justified in, like, oh, I'm going to be an a-hole on social media, and it's perfectly fine. It's almost the morally correct thing to do. I don't get or understand that.
I don't think that it's the morally correct thing to do at all. I think it's annoying, and it was played out, but I think to characterize Barstool as attacking him, I just don't think it was an attack.
Did I say attack?
Mike did, and okay. I think that's wrong.
I said confront directly.
I don't understand what that's confronting.
How is confront directly versus, I say just adding somebody. Like, honestly, Paul, you're
putting out a libelous headline versus confronting somebody.
Paul, you have said before, like, yeah, this guy blocked me, and I don't even know why. Like, come on, you know why. Like, yeah, exactly.
Well, what, Mike Freeman, the only person that has blocked me?
He's the only person
that's
blocked me?
He's the only person that's blocked me. Schefter blocked me for a little bit, and Adam Schefter did for a little bit, and it was for understandable reasons now that I have a little bit of maturity behind me.
Right, but now, but at the time...
Mike Freeman was because I said it's asinine to say that J.J. Watt in his second year can't be Lawrence Taylor. That's why I got blocked.
Okay, so as far as Schefter, what did you say to Schefter?
I called him a hyperbolistic douche canoe.
At the time, did you think it was unreasonable for him to block you?
No.
Okay.
Now I look back at it and I'm like, that was a stupid thing to have tweeted out in the first place. But I don't think any of the things that these people are doing is confrontational, where I think a headline about somebody calls him something,
but
that's almost libelous. There's actual malice behind it.
The problem is you're looking at, like, the best Hey JJ tweets and acting like that's what all of it was, versus, like honestly, like, the litany of crap he got from Barstool people because Barstool decided they didn't like JJ Watt. Like, it wasn't the funny Hey JJ jokes that got to JJ. It was, like, and it wasn't just Hey JJ stuff. It was, like, other stuff just directed at him, constantly clowning on him whenever he did anything, including, like, when he wrote that heartfelt piece in the what was the name of that
Players website? Tribune?
In the Players Tribune, he was funny about it on this podcast, because he was basically saying, like, oh no, that was actually, like, a true story, and I got crushed for it because everybody's so damn cynical.